Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. It is Election Day in Georgia, our favorite day of the year here at Political Rewind. It also happens to be the debut of the new Tuesday edition of our show starting this week. As you, I'm sure, know by now, we are going to be on the air 4 days a week, Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And as I say, every time I mention that, it has to do with the fact that you as listeners have said to us you like the show and would like us to be with you more often. And for that, we're very grateful. You make our work much more meaningful. So thank you for that. You can watch us right now on Facebook Live. Go to the GPB News Facebook page, and you will find us there. If you want to tweet us at PoliticsGPB. I mentioned yesterday that sometimes when we get so many comments on Twitter or Facebook Live, it's really, we really don't have enough time to read a lot of what you are saying. But we really do want you to be part of the show. And whether we get to a tweet or a Facebook post of yours, I hope you'll continue to engage with the show. Okay. All of that said, let's get down to the business of the day, talking about this really crucial runoff election. I'm really pleased to welcome into the studio Chuck Williams, who works for the Ledger Inquirer, the Columbus Ledger Inquirer, McClatchy paper down in Columbus. You've been writing about politics, among other things, for how many years, Chuck?
I've been there 29 years. I've been on the news side as a reporter now since 2001.
All right, so you have good institutional memory about Georgia politics.
Not as good as Galloway, who normally sits here, but I understand a little bit about
We're really glad that we have you here. Julianne Thompson joins us today. She, of course, is a Republican political consultant, very active in Republican Party politics. And one of your roles you're a grassroots activist, and you mobilize grassroots support for your causes. And you've also been very active in trying to recruit women to run in Republican races. Thank you for being here today, Julianne.
Thanks so much for having me.
Senator Nan Orrick, DeKalb County. That DeKalb is like the center of your, no?
I have no DeKalb voters.
I thought,
I'm all Fulton.
You're all Fulton?
I had,
I thought
DeKalb. Years ago in the House, I had some DeKalb, I had some DeKalb precincts.
All right, well, that, yes. That just showed. Thank you. That's the first thing that I learned today. One of many, I'm sure.
Senate District 36 looks like.
joining us on the phone from Washington, Tamar Hallerman, the AJC's political reporter on the Hill. Hi, Tamar.
Hi, I'm no Jim Galloway, but I'll try really hard.
Well, you're so darn you're a lot younger than Jim Galloway or me, which is why we like having you on. You're a breath of fresh air for us. Thanks, Tamar. Okay, let's get right to it. We know that today we have a crucial runoff election for governor, among other offices. This has been a bruising 9-week battle between Kemp and Cagle. And I thought, as we get into the conversation, we'd play for you what these two candidates, a little bit of what they had to say as voters were getting set to go to the polls. So here's a little from the rallies that they had as they both did statewide tours yesterday. First, here's Casey Cagle.
Very clearly that there is one person that he trusts to take the torch and to move Georgia forward, and that is Casey Cagle. And if we want to stay on the right path, then I am that person. And if you want a candidate that can certainly win in November, I am that candidate as well.
At the very beginning of that, we upcut that a little bit. He's saying, he's pointing out that Nathan Deal is the one who has said that Casey Cagle's the best choice for governor. And let's listen. Here's Brian Kemp.
We seized the momentum in this race because of our hard work, because of our grassroots people that were out there pounding day after day, month after month, you know, over a year now, and it's finally paying off. And we have kept that momentum moving into this week when we secured the endorsement of Hunter Hill, Clay Tippins, Newt Gingrich. Randy Evans tweeted he was voting for me, Coach Dooley and his family. Many others, and none more important than President Donald Trump.
You know what, Tamar, it's interesting. Certainly when you hear Kemp lay out those final endorsements trumped by the president's endorsement, topped by that endorsement, you would have to say that moving into today's election, it does feel like he's got some real energy, doesn't it, Tamar?
Yeah, absolutely. And talking to, operatives in both parties, it seems like everybody's expecting this to be Brian Kemp's day.
Well, you know what's interesting about that? Julianne, let me get you in. I get that. But for the last three shows, I've gone around the table and said, look, Kemp has the president now. He's got a lot of momentum. Are you all ready to call this race? And perhaps out of a need to be cautious, everybody said, no, you can't quite count Casey Cagle out because the Trump endorsement could work both ways.
And I would say to that if we were talking about the regular primary, it would be a different story because the pool of voters is much larger. And there might be a lot more in that pool of voters that would sway more toward a Nathan Deal endorsement versus a Donald Trump endorsement. But we're talking about a much smaller pool of voters. We're talking about getting your most ardent base of support out to the polls. And those are usually the most ardent grassroots conservatives that are very much in support of Donald Trump and look toward his endorsements as to how they should vote. And I think that it is something that has given great momentum to Brian Kemp. I think he had the momentum going in to the primary or to the primary runoff for a variety of reasons, but mainly because it came down to the fact from day one, the Kemp campaign built a very strong grassroots presence throughout the primary. And because they knew if this came to a runoff, it was going to be that grassroots apparatus that put them over the top in the runoff.
Chuck, what's going on down in Columbus as you talk to voters down there?
You know, it's interesting. I was listening to both Brian and Casey's clips that you played, and it has come down in a large part to the endorsements. And as I was driving up here today, I stopped off. One good thing about coming from Columbus to Atlanta, it's increased the number of barbecue restaurants I can now go to. And I stopped at a barbecue restaurant between home and here. And as I was paying up an hour and a half, 2 hours ago, I gave the guy the money. I noticed he had his Georgia Vote sticker on. So I just, being nosy like I am, I said, if you don't mind me asking, who'd you vote for in the governor's race? I was assuming he was a Republican. It was a pretty good assumption. And he looked at me and he said, you know, I didn't know who I was going to vote for when I was driving to the poll this morning. He said, I know both of them. I know the whole thing. But he said, by the time I got to the poll, I decided to vote for Casey. And he said he voted for Cagle for one reason. He kept hearing the words of Deal, and he said, I will tell you right now, I think our governor is a very wise man. And I don't know if there's enough. I think smart money is clearly on Kemp today. But I thought it was interesting that this guy whose vote could have gone either way basically went with the governor's endorsement over the president's. Does that happen across the state?
Yeah, Nan, that is an interesting response from a voter out there. And I think partly because how do you pick between the two? I mean, Nathan Deal has ended up becoming one of the most beloved governors in recent Georgia history.
He's very popular,
yeah.
And he has a good rating actually among Democrats. He's not in the basement with the Democratic opinion either, that all sounds very logical to me from a perspective of an undecided Republican voter who's been on the ground and in the state and in the news and making policy, and just gave this very reasonable endorsement of Casey Cagle's being able to carry on his work. Will that pull the day for Cagle? None of us know.
All right, so let's do this. Tomorrow, I want to get you in. And before I do, though, we've been out across the state. Our bureaus in Macon and Savannah have set out a couple of cases, interns and others, to talk to voters on this election day as they were going to or coming from the polls. And we're going to play a little bit of their sound and then get you all to react. So let's start with these clips.
Savannah has one of the most successful ports on the East Coast. The tariffs issue may affect the port. It may affect Savannah. So that's something that I weighed in my mind. You know, it's about jobs and prosperity. Those are the things that are driving my vote.
My name is Bill Wiley, and I'm from Macon, Georgia. And I voted for Casey Cagle. I thought Cagle was a better man because of his experience and because of some of the things that, true or false, that happened when Ryan was Secretary of State.
My name is Kathy Talbert, and I am from Macon, Georgia. It's my civic duty. I love that we are able to choose our own leaders and elect who we believe would represent us well. So I am proud to do it. You know, all elections are important, but really when you've got a runoff, you really have to come out and make sure that the person that you feel most qualified to represent you, that you come out and vote for them. For governor, I voted for Brian Kemp.
So those are just the first of a number of voter comments we're going to play tomorrow. One of the things that's interesting, I will tell you that our people in the field did find more people who said they were voting for Kemp today than Cagle. And in many cases, as you'll hear as we move forward, it is because of the endorsement of Donald Trump. But one thing that I'm interested in, Tamar, that you may be seeing up there is there is some concern among Republicans nationally that Trump did decide to jump into this Republican primary contest because it gives him a little trepidation about how he might decide to jump into Republican primaries across the country, yes?
Yeah, and my understanding was that this endorsement from the president came last Wednesday. Apparently, there were plans on Thursday for the Cagle campaign to be going to brief the president on the race. So nobody saw this coming at all, including Kemp's people. In general, you find a lot of top Republican officials from the outside not wanting to endorse in party primaries. You don't want to, put your thumb on the scale at all. But clearly the president is, really interested in politics, and he does follow a lot of these races. But the New York Times had a really interesting story earlier in this week. They were quoting governors at the Republican Governors Association meeting, and some of them had mentioned they're a little concerned the president could jump into a race randomly and throw off the calculus, especially when it comes to, state house seats where they're worried about being able to keep Republicans in power. So it was a kind of interesting story.
Julianne, we haven't talked to you since the endorsement. What was your reaction when Trump jumped into this race? Do you think it's smart for the president to get in the middle of a GOP primary?
Well, I certainly didn't expect him to get involved in this race, but at the same time, it wasn't a huge surprise because we're living in the age of Donald Trump where you're never really quite sure what he's going to do. And so I think that is a frustration that a lot of leaders in the party are dealing with, wondering which races he's going to get involved with and which ones that he's not. But I think that it has certainly done nothing but help the Kemp campaign.
Yeah, all right. So let's look at what may have been a turning point in this race. Chuck, let me set the stage if I could. When this race really started about a year ago, there was a sense that Casey Cagle was most likely going to be the Republican nominee and quite likely would be the next governor of Georgia. He had the money that he needed to make the race. He was raising hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars without a great deal of difficulty. He had business leaders who were behind him, who saw him as the safe choice and as someone who had shepherded the business interests through the legislature during his long tenure as lieutenant governor. Everything seemed to be moving in his direction. Before we even get to what happened in the runoff campaign, what was a turning point that allowed Brian Kemp to come as close as he did to hold Cagle's totals down so much that he couldn't possibly get the nomination without a runoff?
Yeah, it's hard to say that, but if you look back at Cagle's career, he's been an underdog a lot longer than he has been the guy that's been the front runner. And maybe it just wasn't a comfortable role. I mean, you look back, I mean, here's a guy who didn't grow up who grew up in a tough
home.
A tough child, a tough home. And he laid some of that out in that letter he wrote yesterday that really sort of showed you who he was. And I think when it got into this, I mean, he just never seemed fully comfortable in that role.
Well, he also, maybe that's true. Nan, the other thing is Brian Kemp, you know, I said on the show yesterday, I used to call Brian the outsider in their show. Well, of course, he's not an outsider. He was Secretary of State, but he is the disruptor. And his first round of TV commercials, you know, the shotgun, it caused controversy, the pickup truck. I get it. But that was a disruptive message that seemed to catch fire very quickly.
Well, it was the Trump playbook. That's what it was. And then he stares into the camera and says, yeah, I said that. It's like, I'm Mr. Politically Incorrect, and I'm loving it every day, and you're going to love me because I'm going to disrupt. Yeah, he was absolutely playing the Trump card. Of course, there's a whole slice of the electorate, including Republican moderates, that are appalled by that. You know, it made the national late-night comedy rounds with Seth Meyer and others. And his pickup truck with, I'm going to haul these illegal criminals back to where they came from in my pickup truck, all of that is positioning himself to out-Trump anyone. And I say to you, the suburbs in our metropolitan areas across the state are not, that's not who they are. In large part.
Well, and I think, Julianne, that's one of the reasons that some people are not quite ready to discount Cagle's chances of winning tonight because of this notion that perhaps there are people in the Republican Party who are turned off by Trump. But as you say, that's not the issue. The issue is who shows up at the polls and who's voted early.
Well, that's right. We're talking about the runoff where the rules of engagement are different. But going back to what I said before and about a grassroots apparatus, politics is about relationships. And those relationships were not built by the Cagle campaign early on. And you can look at the primary and you can see that Cagle finished in the, what was it, like 36%. So the vast majority was divided among the other candidates. So it only stands to reason that those people would mobilize if another person came out of the primary who was acceptable to them, that they could mobilize behind, they would. And Brian Kemp came out of the primary, and he was easy for people to mobilize behind. Not only did they believe in his policies, but, you know, a great many Republican activists have Brian Kemp's cell phone number. He's been accessible to them for many years. This isn't a new relationship that he tried to build with them, you know, for 2018. So he was easy for people to mobilize behind because they knew him and felt like he was one of them.
All right, so Chuck, you want to jump in?
And, you know, down in Columbus, we saw a lot more of Cagle than we did Kemp. Because in Columbus, there are obviously more Democratic voters in Muskogee County than there are Republicans. But there is a lot of corporate campaign money in Muskogee County. And Casey did very well in those circles. Some of the same people that supported Governor Barnes were giving heavily to the Cagle campaign. If you look at that, and then when the election day came in May, Casey was the clear front runner in Muskogee County, and Kemp got 11% of the vote in Muskogee County. Hunter Hill beat him pretty handily. And so, you know, from our perspective down there, we've seen a lot more of Cagle in that area in our part of Georgia than we have
Kemp. I love the fact that you just set a benchmark for us. We are going to really have to pay attention to the Muskogee County vote tonight. If Kemp only got 11%, it'll really be interesting to see what his turnout is like down there this time.
And that goes to the question of a different sensibility that you'll find in urban and suburban and exurban populations in the state. I mean, Democratic governor got elected in Colorado against all odds a few years back. He said he looked for the people in the suburbs that wanted good government, and they voted for the Democrat that they thought could deliver. It wasn't about party. It was about services.
I think it's also about the tape, and I think it's the fact that the tape got a lot of media in the metropolitan Atlanta area, which Casey Cagle was leading in the polls in the metro area, and that flipped to Brian Kemp after the news of the tape came out. And there have been a lot of rural areas that it's taken time for that news to get to. So I don't think that had reached them.
Yeah, Tamar, as we march through how this election unfolded, there is no way to underestimate how important the release of that secret tape made by Clay Tippins in what Casey Cagle thought was a private conversation, the impact on that is incalculable, isn't it?
Exactly. And excuse me, part of the big criticism of Cagle over the years was that he was a very kind of transactional kind of guy, which you could make the argument that's why a lot of the interests in Atlanta liked him. The business groups and the groups who had a stake in the status quo and wanted to keep what Nathan Deal had built. And this tape just proved in a very kind of naked fashion, his kind of transactional side, which is not what voters want to see. People don't want to see how the sausage gets made, even though we know it gets made somehow. And to see it in such a naked way, I think was hard for a lot of people to take.
The afternoon the tape was released, and I'll remember this, you were in Columbus. We were at the River Center preparing to do the show there. And Tom came up to you, showed it
Tom
to you.
Tom Faust, our producer.
He came up, showed it to you on his cell phone. And I won't forget when you looked away and go, you just looked up and go, this is really big. It's so big, I'm not even sure we have time to digest it and discuss it.
Well,
tonight.
It's exactly right. We did not discuss it on that show because we learned about it
light breaking
about half an hour before we went on the air. And we weren't sure exactly what it was. But Julianne, if there is a moment at which when we look back, either Cagle will have overcome this incredible problem the tape created, or we'll say this is where Kemp really started to put the race away.
Well, I agree. And I think that he made, and I've said this before on your show, he's made a huge mistake by not addressing his comments, maybe by not coming out and saying, sometimes we have to make decisions in politics that we don't actually agree with, but we feel like that this is what the populace wants, and so that we go in this direction. He has not addressed any of the comments he made. Instead, he said, well, you should discount them because I didn't know I was being taped. Well, our parents have taught us from day one that your morality is measured by what you do when no one is listening. And I think that it just hasn't played well for him that he hasn't addressed any of those comments and that he's tried to just sweep them under the rug because he didn't know he was being recorded. What you say still matters.
All right, I've got to get him. Go ahead, Tamar.
I wanted to go off with what Julianne just said. I think there's something to say about likability, like kind of that George W. Bush, like, who do you want to get a beer with? And I think Kemp has had that edge. And I think the tape was something that kind of put voters even more in Kemp's camp in that way.
I'm going to, you know what, Nan, I want to give you a chance to go on. We'll take a break in a moment. But I think what Tamar just said is interesting. You've been at the Capitol for a very long time, so you know Brian Kemp style, you know Casey Cagle style. Is there anything to her point about Brian Kemp as a generally more approachable person?
Oh, I don't know that I would put it quite that way. I mean, I've seen some very ugly exchanges with Brian Kemp, and I've seen him take on Stacey Abrams and make all these unfounded charges against her and question her integrity and then come up with nothing. So I've seen a very ugly side of Brian Kemp down there.
In a day-to-day, day-to-day encounters, he's more approachable, though.
Well,
no,
I don't know.
Say.
The nurses, the nurses had a fit about the way they were treated under Brian Kemp, the Secretary of State, over their licensing process, and they were backed up months, if not years, on getting processed. And then he cavalierly takes away their staffer when they finally got somebody that was running the operation well. So I don't have that view of Kemp as hail fellow well met. And then this is the guy that's been messing with Georgia's voting rights. Well, he's gone into court over and over, and the court's forced
him. Yeah, which
him.
We know is going to get to be an issue
That's
in the
right.
general election.
He speaks to the average, everyday man. He speaks slowly. He speaks with a Southern accent, and he looks directly into the camera, and that reaches people because he seems to make eye contact with you. And that has had an impact on it. I think Tamara is completely correct. He is a guy that you would more think about going and getting a beer with.
All right. I wanted to let that discussion play out before we got to a break. Now we really have to, because our engineer, Tyler Morris, is staring daggers at me for hesitating to do it. Here we go, Tyler. Here's the break.
Peter Sagal here, and if you're in your car, I want you to try something. Roll up the windows, you're all sealed inside, take a good smell. Can you smell that? That was the great cologne experiment of 2004. You should not have gone with the dollar store for that one. Well, you can lose that old car smell by donating your vehicle to one of your favorite causes, like public radio. It only takes a few minutes, and just like that, you've supported the station, and well, you are on your way to a life of better smells.
Go to gpb.org/cars and thanks.
We're back on Political Rewind. Tom Faust just told me during the break that we have a lot of you watching on Facebook Live. So I'm going to try to see if I can find some of your comments and see if we can, in fact, get to some of them. But there are an awful lot of you out there, and we're glad you're watching the show that way. Let's listen to some more voter comments as they went to or coming from the polls. These come from around the state of Georgia today.
I am Dana Arnold, and I live in Perry, Georgia. I voted for Kemp. His conservative views were much more in line with mine, I felt like, so that's exactly why I voted for him. His stance on the gun laws, his stance on abortion, quite a few of his views were more in line with mine. Okay. More Christian conservative.
I am James Tatham.
And where do you live?
Kathleen, Georgia.
And do you mind telling me who you voted for in the gubernatorial runoff today?
For the governor? Mm-hmm. Kemp.
What was it about Kemp that swayed you?
He was backed by Trump. It's important because we think Trump is leading us in the right direction.
I am Darren Meadows. I live in Perry, Georgia.
Okay.
Casey Cagle. He's been a longtime supporter of law enforcement, which I am. And I've always liked his politics.
I am Jessica Perdue. So I think that they both had definite opinions, and they both had interesting things to say. How they went about it was not kind or benevolent like we want our children to be.
I think our whole society has gotten to where they beat each other up a little bit more than they should. We should be one whole country together, united, praying for each other.
Voices from people who were at the polls today voting in this runoff election. We appreciate so much our Savannah and Macon bureaus for going out and finding those voters for us. Tamar, the last two people particularly expressing a sentiment that was fairly commonplace. This race got very, very nasty. The question is going to be moving forward whether there's going to be a price to pay for the eventual Republican nominee.
I don't think so at all. I mean, I think that's just the direction our, to put it mildly, that's just the direction our are going in at the moment. And especially if one side is throwing those barbs, you feel like you'll kind of act that way. My colleague James Salzer wrote a story about all the outside money that poured into the gubernatorial race so far, and how we can only expect to see that even more. And I think, you know, those groups have also kind of helped play into that kind of nastiness as well. So I don't think this will let up anytime soon.
All right. I appreciate that comment. And I think probably, Julianne, we've seen lots of nasty political primaries in the past, and they don't really bleed over into the general. Plus, we expect we're going to see a nasty general election back and forth as well.
I'm sure that we will. And I don't think that there's anything that has come out in the gubernatorial primary that isn't anything that the Democrats would not have already hit the Republicans on anyway.
All right. So let's...
Well, those Republicans among themselves created the whole blow up around the tape. There was not a Democratic intervention there. Cagle did things. Clay Tippins did things. Lindsey Tippins did things. And Brian Kemp did things. And it blew up that primary runoff, to, as far as I can see.
All right. So let's move past tomorrow and talk just briefly, and we're going to turn in a couple minutes to looking at the races for other races, the congressional Democratic congressional races, for instance. But before we do, as long as we're on the gubernatorial race, we know that with Stacey Abrams running against whoever the Republican nominee is, I just said, this is going to be a heated contest. And we saw our first significant sign of that today. The Republican Governors Association has bought time and has a spot on the air, a TV spot on the air, attacking Abrams. We're going to listen to the audio of that spot right now.
Meet Stacey Abrams, most radical liberal to ever run for governor, a career politician funded by Nancy Pelosi's California friends.
I'm thrilled that Stacey Abrams won the Democratic gubernatorial primary in Georgia last night. I look forward to supporting her campaign in the months to come.
Abrams wants you to pay more in taxes to fund her liberal big government ideas. Stacey Abrams, funded by Pelosi's friends, loved by Hillary, too liberal for Georgia.
Nanork, you'd expect that both Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton would make cameo appearances in an ad that attacks a Democratic candidate.
Sure.
But, you know, you said earlier, before the show went on, we talked about that a little, and you said, oh, it's the same old, same old. But it's the same old, same old that's done worked pretty well for Republicans in past elections, hasn't it?
Well, you look at the numbers, and our numbers are growing. We're surging forward. We had record turnout in our Democratic primary for the governor's race. Stacey Abrams took 76% in that race, and she is going strong and moving ahead and resonating with voters all across the state. Yeah, there are going to be voters that'll never push the button for Stacey Abrams, and maybe they are lapping this up like a month-old pup, but I don't think it's reaching a lot of people in the suburban, the new emerging suburbs that want to see government services, government run efficiently, transparency, don't want to see the backroom deals that we heard on the tape, and want to see us get our tax dollars back from Washington that we've been sending up there that then get sent to other states to pay for health care coverage for their citizens, not for Georgians.
Chuck?
At the same time, we've seen this anti-Pelosi argument play out in the suburbs. Last year during the special election, Karen Handel ran a ton of ads linking John Ossoff to Nancy Pelosi, and it seemed to work out pretty darn well for her. We've seen in our own polling that Pelosi is pretty unpopular in our coverage area, so I think it could make a difference.
The message of that ad aside, when you look at it, what it says to me, kind of just looking at it and wanting to know more, is the Republican Governors Association just spent $750,000 on a two-week ad buy in Georgia to paint a narrative of who Stacey Abrams is.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make that buy if there's not polling this early in July literally the day Georgians are voting in the runoff. They don't make that buy unless there's something there saying the message needs to start now.
That's right. The viability of Stacey Abrams as a gubernatorial candidate is quite strong and growing. And that's, I think, you're exactly right, Chuck. That's maybe what they're seeing.
I get, Julianne, here I am playing political consultant, and believe me, it's not something I do.
And you're playing, right?
Yeah, I'm really playing. It does... The Stacey Abrams people have been crowded out of the news cycle ever since this runoff began. 9 weeks. Now, they're out raising money, which is crucial to them right now, especially since she spent most of her money during the primary. But with ads like the Republican Governors Association has already begun to put on the air, is there a possibility that Abrams people have missed an opportunity to define her before the Republicans define her?
Well, I can tell you that most of the Republicans that I talked to during the primary, the person that they wanted to run against was Stacey Abrams. It was not Stacey Evans. Stacey Evans came across as being much more centrist, much more moderate, and it was much easier to draw a definitive line between the Republican candidates and Stacey Abrams because she has governed more to the left than what Stacey Evans has or what she appeared to be as a candidate. I think that, yes, this is going to be a competitive race, but I still think in the end that the Republicans are going to win.
I talked to a Republican yesterday, and we were talking about the governor's race and talking about how it's kind of laid out. And this person said it would be a much different discussion right now if all of a sudden you were looking at a shuffled Democratic ticket. If you had John Barrow at the top of the ticket running for governor, Abrams running for lieutenant governor, and Stacey Evans running for
secretary. Yes, but at the same time, Nan, I think it's fair to say that Democrats like you would much rather have Brian Kemp to run against than Casey Cagle. That's the conventional wisdom.
I think a Kemp at the head of the Republican ballot makes them much more vulnerable to defeat. I do, because of that hard right wing line that Kemp, the drumbeat of his hard right wing politics, is anathema to a whole section of people.
Right. You think that
And I go back in time and I say that the Democrats said, well, Donald Trump is the one that we want to run against in the general election. So I don't really put much credence in that.
Well, what I'm looking at is the internal polling out of the Abrams campaign, and they show 9 points up with Kemp, 5 points up with Cagle. That's
wow.
What they show.
Say that again.
9 points up with Kemp against Kemp and 5 points up against Cagle.
Well, you got your story for tomorrow, Chuck.
Wow, that's interesting. But when you look at this, Nan, I mean, do you think this helps folks like Charlie Bailey running for attorney general? You think that having Kemp at the top of the Republican ticket will help Democrats running statewide down the ballot?
I was talking about who's going to prevail in the governor's race, and of course, whoever prevails in the governor's race, that's gonna echo down the rest of their party ballot.
All right, I want to jump in because I do want to get to a couple of the other races on the ballot
today.
Got so
much to talk about. Yeah.
Well, that's right, you're all talking about such interesting things. I don't want to jump in too much. Tomorrow we've got two important Democratic congressional. Runoffs going on today in the 6th District. You've got Lucy McBath versus Kevin Abel in the 7th. You have Carolyn Bordeaux against David Kim. These are important tomorrow because Democrats think that maybe Karen Handel in the 6th and Rob Woodall in the 7th are vulnerable. That argument isn't going over with a lot of people, but there is the feeling that maybe those districts could flip. You want to talk about those races?
Sure. Both of those are in the suburbs north of Atlanta, have long been Republican strongholds. But because of Trump's unpopularity with some suburban voters, particularly women, Democrats have been a little more bullish about their ability to compete there. At the same time, we saw last year in the special election, with all the money in the world, John Ossoff wasn't able to flip the seat. And Karen Handel so far has spent all year just fundraising a ton. She has so much money and is just kind of sitting there quietly waiting for her opponent. Rob Woodall's a little more interesting. That district went a little bit more for Trump than the 6th did, but he's not as strong a fundraiser as Handel has been. And it'll be interesting to see who comes out of these races. We haven't seen a ton of polling, and all of the four candidates competing in both of these Democratic contests are all political newbies. None of them had a name before they kind of got into these races. So it'll be very interesting to see who comes out and whether they have a chance at all.
Let me pick up on something that you just said and share, and then give you the first chance at it. Jim Galloway said something that I hadn't given any thought to on our show the other day. You've got Stacey Abrams at the top of the Democratic ticket. You could have potentially Carolyn Bordeaux and Lucy McBath running
two congressional
for
races.
Congress. Mm-hmm. You have a woman, Sarah
Riggs
Amico,
lieutenant
who's
governor.
Running for lieutenant governor. Tomorrow, Democrats could presumably have a very strong female ticket for the fall. That's fascinating.
Exactly. And at least in the 6th district, they're going up against Karen Handel, the only woman in the Georgia congressional delegation. So it'll be really interesting to see if any rhetoric changes at all.
You know, well, it's going to be interesting. Remember that in the Ossoff race, a total newcomer out of nowhere, John Ossoff, a fine young man, a friend of mine, closed a 22-point gap. That they'd been pulling in that district for the Republicans, and That was a heck of a lift, and they've been building in that district ever since. So that's when the first, that's when they woke up and said, oh my God, there's a big Democratic vote that's alive and well and growing in the suburbs.
But are they going to put the kind of money into it that they did last time? And I don't think so. Even like Tamar said, with all the money in the world, they were not able to pull it off. Karen Handel's going to be safe. Rob Woodall's going to be safe. The 6th and 7th are staying Republican.
Well, you look, you didn't have a strong, they weren't running with a strong Democratic ticket up and down the ballot that's working and digging down deep into the electorate.
The part of Gwinnett combined with, I live in the 7th district, the part of Gwinnett, you know, Suwanee, Sugar Hill, Buford, combined with coming in Forsyth County, that is a safe enough district, at least for the time being, for Republicans to hold on to it.
Chuck?
David Schaefer's seat, by the way.
That's what I was going to turn to.
His seat is going to go Democratic. That right out there in the heart of Gwinnett County, you know where it's located better than I do.
It's not divided into Forsyth County, though, the 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a state Senate seat.
Briefly, before we take a break, we do have a lieutenant governor's runoff on the Republican side of this thing. Jeff Duncan is facing David Schaefer. Well, let me ask you, Julianne, because you watch this race very closely. It is a little surprising to many people, and I guess I'm one of them, that David Schaefer, given his high visibility and given his leadership roles in the Senate, is really tied up in a runoff that some of the polls suggest could be fairly close. Do you really think it is?
I think it's going to be a little close. I can't, of course, I'm not going to give any numbers as to what I think it's going to be.
Yeah, not on election day.
No, but I do think David Schaefer is going to pull it off, and for a variety of reasons. But one of those reasons being is, you know, I mean, yes, Jeff Duncan, you know, he's an attractive candidate with, you know, a former career as a baseball player, cute little family. But the problem is they have ran such a negative campaign.
It's been a very negative campaign.
The dark money that has come in to that, you know, in support of that campaign against David Schaefer has been nothing short of morally repugnant, in my opinion.
Well, of course, Nan.
Dark money. Democrats have been talking for a long time about getting dark money out of politics.
All right. I'm all for it.
All right, we got to get to a break. I do want to, before we take the break, tell you we've been getting, I'll summarize them. We've been getting some really interesting comments from you on Facebook Live and Twitter. I have to say, Chuck Williams, you've been the subject of a number of them. People are delighted that you're here from Columbus. Your mayor, Teresa Tomlinson, a frequent panelist on the show, among other things, wonders if you are really wearing a tie today, Mr. Williams. She also says she loves the fact, Julianne Thompson, that Republicans, she is a Democratic mayor, seem to be so overconfident about winning the governor's office.
She's actually a nonpartisan mayor.
Well, she's a nonpartisan mayor, but she's a Democrat.
She was elected nonpartisan, but she had since the last year and a half, she has been increasingly more active on the Democratic side.
Yeah, well, we all expect that in less than a couple of years,
we'll be sitting here talking
about her chances for whatever she decides to run for.
She won't run next as a Republican. No.
Yeah. Laura Adams says, the only time I ever hear the name Nancy Pelosi is when I hear conservative talk radio. She's far removed from the daily life of Georgia Democrats. Matt Schweitzer says, if fundraising is what defines leadership in the Democratic Party, they need to think loud and clear and hard about the direction they're headed in. We got a tweet from someone, and I can't find it right now. I wish I could, who essentially said, you NPR folks with your noses up in the air, essentially accusing us of being such liberals. Julianne, it's probably the first time anyone has ever accused you of being a liberal. All right.
Welcome to the club. It's grand. Jump in the deep end of the pool. We have a lot of fun, get a lot done.
Let's get another break out of the way. And when we come back, a story that is developing out of Washington, has been since late this morning, that has to do with President Trump's apparent awareness that farmers are not thrilled about the tariffs and how they might be affecting agricultural exports. We'll do that after this break.
Sunny Purdue. On the next Fresh Air, can we eat meat ethically? Chemist Davis says yes. After working for years as a restaurant reviewer and an editor, she apprenticed as a butcher on a family-run small farm and slaughterhouse in France. Then she founded a program to teach people about conscientious slaughtering and inspire responsible meat production and consumption. She has a new memoir. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. Tamar Hallerman is with us in the Washington Bureau of the AJC. Chuck Williams from the Columbus Ledger Inquirer is sitting in the journalist seat in the studio today. Democratic Senator Nan Orrick, Republican political consultant and a Republican activist Julianne Thompson is here with us as well. Richard Bodor sent us a note. He's watching on Facebook Live because this is the debut of the Tuesday edition of the show. He said, Tuesday's no longer my least favorite day. Thanks for another hour of intelligent political discussion. Thank you, Richard. We appreciate your comment. All right. Tamar, excuse me. Ever since the president began imposing tariffs, one of the concerns that has been expressed is that some of these may have a direct impact on some of his most fervent supporters. And in this case, we're talking about people in the agriculture sector, farmers. Soybeans are affected by all this. Georgia has a significant economy of soybean exports. And we know that the president of the European Union is on his way to Georgia to talk, to Washington to talk to the president about some of the tariffs. Put him aside, put Juncker aside for a moment. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what's happening with agriculture. The White House today said it is working on a plan to supply some $12 billion in emergency aid to farmers who could be hurt by the tariffs. That tells me two things. One, that the president intends to keep pushing these tariffs, and two, that they recognize it's a possible political liability. Yes?
Yeah, so agriculture is one of the few areas where the U.S. has been running a surplus in recent years. So we saw immediately after the president imposed his tariffs on aluminum and steel, immediately the EU and China and Canada and Mexico immediately imposed tariffs on a ton of agricultural exports from the U.S. So soybeans was a huge one, but also things like cotton grown in Georgia, peanut butter, that sort of thing. And everywhere you went with Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue or with the president in farm country, people would ask him about it. People were so freaked out. And so for a long time, Sonny Perdue had said he was going to do something to help farmers. So this is an authority that he has, I believe, stemming from a program created in the Great Depression where he can unilaterally pay farmers to kind of make up for some of these tariffs. And he doesn't need Congress's permission at all. And it'll be interesting to see if it's enough. There are a lot of Republican senators who've been slamming this idea. They say farmers want trade deals. They don't want handouts from the government. So
those aren't Sonny's. That's not Sonny's money. That's the taxpayer dollars, too, that he's talking about handing out. So you have on the one hand this nonsense about the tariffs that the president's putting on. And then we're going to dig into our federal dollars, our taxpayer dollars, and pay farmers to cure them of the hurt that the president's program is inflicting. All that's crazy stuff.
Chuck, one of the reasons this is interesting, of course, is that the president went to our agriculture secretary, Sonny Perdue, former governor of Georgia, and asked him to prepare a range of options for how to help the farmers. And this is one of the suggestions that came back from Perdue's office.
One of the things that I found very interesting, I was listening to an NPR piece a couple of weeks ago. They came down and did some national manufacturing stories out of Columbus, and they ventured out over toward Macon, Albany, in that area, and they talked to a pecan farmer. And there were a couple of things I learned in that conversation that, I've been around pecans all my life. Growing up in South Alabama, been around South Georgia. Pecans are a staple.
Yep.
I did not know that this pecan farmer, and I want to say he was in Weston, Georgia, 60% of his crop
goes to China. That's right.
And you know who eats them in China? Wealthy Chinese.
It's a luxury item.
It's a luxury item. They eat them like you and I eat peanuts. They they take them in the shell, crack them, and eat them like. And it was like I'm sitting there going, I never eaten a pecan quite that way, but you know. But it made me sit there and think, okay, here's this farmer, who's a pretty. Pecan farmers are probably a pretty conservative lot of people, the ones I've known over the years. If you start looking, and all of a sudden they're getting hit with this. I mean, because the tariff went to 24%. And what he was saying was there was a 21% tariff years ago, but there was a back door through Vietnam or somewhere. There was a back door into China that they used to get around the tariff. What's happening now, the back door shut down is what he was saying. And so it's a straight up 24% tariff. And right. That number may be off.
So, Julianne, we've gotten some interesting feedback from viewers and listeners about this very issue. Glenn Ashmore sends a note to us saying, a little $12 billion sop to try to keep farmers happy after losing half their soybean market. Christopher Brandon Stokes asked a question. Why do farmers deserve our taxpayer help? Interesting question.
Well, there's a struggle in the Republican Party between the free traders and those who believe that the trade between the United States and other countries has not been fair. So I think that is something that the party is struggling with right now. Of course, you have the vast majority of Congress saying that they disagree with the president when it comes to the tariffs. And I think recently that's why it was like a week and a half ago, Sonny and David Perdue did their tour of South Georgia and the different farms to go and visit with farmers and, you know, to do messaging for the president. So this is a controversy within the party.
All right. We have very little time tomorrow. I want to get one other quick issue in. David Perdue has gotten some pushback from other members of the Georgia delegation because he worked with the president to make sure that a congressional effort to stop the president from freeing up ZTE, the Chinese electronic company that has had so much controversy, to stop the president from allowing them to trade with the U.S. again. And Perdue worked with the president on that. And there's some people up there very upset with him for that, aren't they?
Yeah, and Perdue came out the victor yesterday. They announced a final defense deal for the year, and the provision that David Perdue and the administration had sought was in there. That came after a vote in the Senate last month. I believe it was 85-10 against what Perdue and the president wanted. So a very significant victory for them.
David Perdue is proving tomorrow to be possibly the single best friend that President Trump has on the Hill. There are others, of course, but he may be number one.
Can I add one thing on the agricultural piece?
Real
quick. That is that immigrants are in the fields of Georgia harvesting our crops. When draconian law was passed, anti-immigrant, several years back, our agricultural economy took an $800 million hit. Now, there are people, and I was talking to somebody at the polls this morning in South Georgia, who know that immigrant labor is part of our workforce.
Norik, you get
Yes, and they don't like what's happening.
We're out of time. Norik got the last word and wins the toaster oven on today's show.
It's really the last.
We are completely out of time for today's show. Look, the election is going on for the rest of the day. Polls close across the state at 7 p.m. You can come to the GPB News Facebook page throughout the evening, and we will be updating you on what's happening in the election returns. It's going to be fascinating, and we'll be right back here tomorrow at 2 o'clock to give you the rundown. Julianne Thompson, you will be right back here, and we're going to see whether your predictions today proved true. I'm Bill Nigut. See y'all tomorrow at 2. Happy Election Day.